I'd like to call the House Committee on Human Services to order on this Monday, April 11th, 2011. Thank you all for being here. As you can tell, my co-chair is not here, and we're going to railroad things through like you can't believe. We are going to attempt to work around the schedule till she gets here. She's got a little car trouble, but I'm sure she'll be here shortly, and she's panicking even as we speak. I would like to first...
Leaving you with no adult supervision.
Yes. Well, clearly there's no adult supervision. Thank you, Representative. And we're going to skip around, so just stick with me. I would like to first open a public hearing. Excuse me. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2053. And I would like to ask our colleague, the co-chair of Business and Labor that he's chairing right now, to come forward. That was a little hint to say we need to hurry him through.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, most able administrators. I'm here for, I'm Mike Schaffler, State Representative, House District 48, Happy Valley, Outer Southeast Portland, to come and provide some adult supervision. Anyway, you've heard House Bill 2053, and I apologize to the committee, but most importantly to the incredible group of people that worked on this task force over the last year and a half. And it was a very transformative experience for me, to be quite frank with you. You know the details of the underlying bill, a racial impact statement, the gathering of data, and the distribution of these resources equitably relating to demographics or race, if you will. But one of the things I learned from this is I've been steeped in the foster care system for 5 years since our good friend Representative Krieger got me involved without consulting me. But it's been a great experience. But one of the things that really jumped out at everyone, and it was very glaring, that not only do we remove children from their homes, it can be proven statistically as because of the color of their skin, we leave children in homes that they probably should be removed from because of their color of their skin. It was quite an eye-opener. Now, I have personally opposed racial impact statements over the years because I've seen what environmental impact statements, revenue impact statements, and fiscal impact statements, the trouble they can make, especially when people use them as a political tool. But I'm convinced that we need to give this a good try, and I believe we can do it. And if we don't, we're not just letting the state of Oregon down, but we'll be letting down some of the most vulnerable members of our community who are incredibly valuable. The testimony we heard from the young people who have been through this system and not fared all that well was incredible and moving, and it was a transformative experience for me. So I just wanted to urge you to pass this bill. I'm confident we can do some really good things. I know it can. Some of the things in here present a challenge, especially in light of our situation of resources. I'm also guardedly optimistic myself that we can make this work. But I just wanted to get here, make sure I was on record with my full support of this bill and what the good folks behind it are trying to do. And with that, Mr. Chair, if you have any questions, the department's right behind me. I'm confident they come up and answer them for me.
Thank you. Colleagues, we are in our work session, and I'll update you on some other bills in a moment. This does not have the fiscal, so we can't move it today, but I wanted to make sure that Representative Schaffler had a chance to say something. If you'd like to ask questions or of the department on this bill, I will entertain those now. Representative Fred.
It's not a question. It's just a thank you. Your efforts within this, and I came into this late. I came into this just a year ago, and it was very clear from the interaction that I saw in the committee, in the task force, and the conversations we've had. You have done a remarkable job on this, and I want to thank you for it publicly. We need to make sure that people understand just the kind of work you've been doing. So thank you again.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Representative, that's very kind of you. I'm not known to get involved in the human services area so much. I'm eternally grateful for all you beautiful people that do. I prefer to build America and cut timber and generate power and all the good things of
poopy. Something I ain't do with trees, right?
Dig gravel and cut down trees. But it has been a great experience. I really am grateful. I just want to express my gratitude again, once again, to Representative Krieger for he We passed a sensitive review committee to overlook take one foster care case every biennium and examine it and see what went right and what went wrong. And he didn't consult me; he just appointed me. And well, when the chair of the Judiciary Committee appoints you to something, you step up and you do it. But it's morphed into all kinds of things, including this. And it has been a great experience, sometimes a very heart-wrenching and sad experience. But in the end, I think that's what we're here for. And I want to help make sure these kids get the opportunity they need. And when they become adults, that they have a job to go with it. So thank you, though. Appreciate it. Anything else?
Any other comments? Representative, it's just a wonderful side of you that we weren't, I guess, aware of, and I appreciate you doing this, and I think it's masterful the way you worked in the words like gravel and cutting timber, which we rarely hear in this particular hearing.
Well,
and I'm not saying that to get you going again. I'm just saying it was masterful.
I don't want to ruin my image, but I didn't go to college for nothing.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative White.
Good representative from Happy Valley realizes that these kids need a job when they get out of the foster care system.
Amen. There you go. Very nicely said.
All right.
Thank you, Representative.
Chair. Thank you.
Now, for the record, then, colleagues, House Bill 2053 will be carried over to our next meeting, and I am, for now, closing the work session on House Bill 2053. I would like to open a work session on House Bill 2600, and I would entertain a motion for anyone that would fill in for our good co-chair. Why, there's a volunteer now.
This is Greg. You're the wrong thing. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt a -2 amendment stated 3-23-11.
Vice Chair Thompson moves to adopt the -2 amendment stated 3-23-11 to House Bill 2600. Is there any discussion on the amendments? Seeing none, I'll ask Matt to call the roll.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye.
Representative Parker.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Wideson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Excused.
And Chair Gilley.
Aye. The motion for the amendments carries, and I'd entertain a motion on the bill, amended bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2600 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Thompson moves House Bill 2600 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion on the amended bill? Seeing none, Matt, would you again call the roll, please?
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Parker.
Aye.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Excused.
Chair Gilley.
Aye. The motion passes as amended, and we don't need a carrier as this is going to Ways and Means. Thank you, colleagues, for your patience. We are now, what's your suggestion?
This is getting longer and longer.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to open the work session on House Bill 2237. And colleagues, I'll just have Jennifer give us a brief overview just to get us back in the game here a little bit. Jennifer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2237 recreates the Public Guardian and Conservator Task Force. It sunsets the task force July 1st, 2013, and it declares an emergency effective on passage. This originally had a referral to Ways and Means. The co-speakers have rescinded that referral.
Thank you. I would entertain a motion on this bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2237 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Vice Chair Thompson moves House Bill 2237 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Any discussion on this bill? Thank you. Seeing none, Representative Widener.
So they found no fiscal or anything with this, or
it was reviewed and rescinded
with the task force. Okay.
And the task force, as you recall in the testimony, was already in place,
and
we're now continuing it.
Yeah.
And you recall, this is Representative Dembro was sort of the leader on this and serves on the task force.
Yes.
Any other discussion or questions? Seeing none, Matt, we call the roll.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative
Parker. Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Excuse.
Chair
Gilly. Aye. Motion passes on House Bill 2237, and we're going to ask Representative Dembro to be the carrier. And I now will close the work session on House Bill 2237. Colleagues, I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2237.
We just did that.
No, 3042.
About 34. And I'd like to close that on 2237. I want to make sure everybody's listening. Appreciate
We're
that.
With you.
What I'd really like to do is open a work session on House Bill 3482. Colleagues, we have discussed this, and there is, I think, general agreement on the dash ones and the dash threes. I will have Jennifer just give us a brief overview, maybe, of the amendments. I think we understand the bill, but if not, just tell us about dash ones and dash threes, and I'll entertain.
Dash ones are
going to
be dash threes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 3482 in its original form required Oregon employers who employ six or more individuals to allow eligible employees to take unpaid leave to address issues arising from harassment or sexual harassment. It delineated the unlawful employment practices for an employer and, as requested, required employers to make reasonable safety accommodations to the victims of harassment or sexual harassment. It allowed a state employee in an unclassified or exempt position who was not in a confidential, managerial, or supervisory employee status to be accompanied by an individual selected by the victimized employee to be present during any interview between the employee and employer. As Representative Gilliam indicated, we did have dash one and dash three amendments. However, the dash one amendments were rolled into the dash three.
Thank
so you only need the dash three amendments. It includes the language. What the dash three amendments did is it removed the terms sexual harassment as a required category for employee unpaid leave. So it took that out, so now you're only dealing with the term harassment. It provides a definition for the term victim of harassment and includes an individual who has obtained a court stalking protective order or a temporary court stalking protective order to the definition of victim of stalking.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
One more thing. We did, there was a minimal expenditure impact on the dash three amendments, and so there has been a subsequent referral to Ways and Means added to this bill.
Thank you. I would entertain a motion regarding the dash threes that now include the ones in the
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the dash three amendments to House Bill 3482 dated 4-1-11.
Vice Chair Thompson moves to adopt the dash three amendments dated 4-1-11 to this bill. Is there any discussion? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we've heard testimony from various folks involved here, and part of the issue around, I think, this change in language was that sexual harassment is not defined in statute, correct?
Mm-hmm.
We're not trying to minimize the reality of sexual harassment or harassment in here. We're going with a definition currently in statute. Is that correct?
I think that is a great summary of what happened in the testimony.
And we have heard allegations of false charges of sexual harassment. We have heard very real stories of real sexual harassment, even though it's not defined in statute. But are the various parties involved comfortable with this change in language?
Is my understanding that the answer is yes. That's where the threes came from. Any other?
Mr. Chair, the dash threes did come from Representative Wisnant's office, and that was to address the testimony. At the time, the original testimony was heard on the 30th of March. The term sexual harassment was still part of the amendments that were discussed, but based on the testimony that was provided and the conversations that transpired, that's what predicated the dash threes by his office.
And takes that term out. Representative Widener.
I'm sorry,
Ben, you weren't done, Representative Harker. My apologies.
Thank you.
Hold that thought.
The chief sponsors, the co-chief sponsors of this bill are Representative Wisnant, as mentioned, and our good co-chair, who is not here at the moment.
When you say good co-chair.
You're the even better co-chair right here, right now, sir. You are the only co-chair we have. Is our co-chair comfortable with this language as well?
Yes, she is. I don't often speak for her, but we discussed this
tell
on
her
Thursday.
You did.
The answer is yes, and I think it's a great question since she's not here.
Thank you.
Representative Widener.
Yeah. Looking at this with the language change and everything, it makes more sense to me because it's sexual harassment, sexual assault, or stalking. Now it's harassment, sexual assault, or stalking. That seems like it does a better job rather than being redundant.
On the dash threes.
And we have something that is already written in statute that we're following rather than just leaving it open. So I'm very comfortable with the dash threes.
Thank you, Representative. Other comments or questions on the amendment? We have that motion on the floor regarding the amendments, and so I'm going to ask Matt to call the roll.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Harker.
Aye.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Excused.
Chair Gilliam.
Aye. The motion to adopt the dash three amendments passes, and I would entertain a motion on the bill, amended bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3482 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Thompson moves House Bill 3482 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion now on the amended bill? Seeing none, I'll ask Matt to call the roll again.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye. Thank you.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Tomei?
Is excused.
Chair Gilliam?
Aye. The motion passes, and House Bill 3482, as amended, will go to the floor after its referral to Committee on Ways and Means. I will close the work session on House Bill 3482. Thanks for your patience, colleagues. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2059. And Jennifer, would you again give us a brief description?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2059 provides that monies from a judgment and a settlement agreement for a minor ward in the custody of Department of Human Services be paid into a trust account or subaccount with the Oregon State Treasury. The accounts are to be established by DHS or the Oregon Health Authority for the purpose of receiving the awarded money. This was originally heard on April 4th. Excuse me. We have not received a fiscal analysis yet on this bill.
Which we need.
In the interest of moving along as far as we can, we have a number of bills that are on the docket. Obviously, we don't have fiscals. I'm going to ask a representative from the Department of Human Services, I don't know which one we're asking, I'm sorry, to come up, and we'll have some discussion here, realizing that we can't actually move the bill today. Thank you for coming forward.
Of course.
Chair Gilliam, members of the committee, my name is Sonia Fisher. I'm the legislative director for the Department of Human Services.
Do you just want to entertain questions? Is that what your preference is, or do you have something to say generally about the bill?
I believe public testimony was received on April 4th, and that outlined the purpose of the bill. If there are specific questions, I'm happy to answer them. If you'd like another overview of the purpose of the bill, I'm happy to provide that as well.
Anyone prefer an overview at this point from the department? Are there any questions? Representative Widener.
Yeah, I think I was talking with a few people on the bill and everything, and their concern was pulling it out of a private account, putting it into the state. And I assured them from your testimony before that it would still be for that child, even though the state has it, versus being in the private account, and the whole purpose of this is to save money, so you're not paying fees to the bank or anything, and you're just handling all in one location. One of the other concerns that came up was access to the money for different things. Would a foster parent be able to just go grab the money, or what happens if something happens with the child passes away, how does the money transfer? And I'm sure that's normal legal statute. Or if, for some reason, they have a grandparent that passes away that leaves them money for school, would it go to this account? And then how do you protect it from the foster parents or somebody getting a hold of it, things like that? So just for the record, if we could get that clear and out there for everybody one more time, I think would be positive.
Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Widener, I can answer. I think I got most of those questions. I'm not sure if I captured all of them. There was a multitude of questions there. Currently, the settlement monies are kept in the Treasury in subaccounts. This bill conforms our current practice with statute once this statute is amended. The purpose of keeping them within subaccounts is it's much less expensive for us to manage them within the Treasury subaccounts than within individual accounts within individual banks. And it is my understanding, although I will, if I'm misspeaking today, I will clarify and bring this back to you, that the Department of Human Services, the caseworkers that have custody of the children, are the ones that manage those monies so that the foster parents don't have direct access to those funds. And did I miss a question?
I think the next would be if a grandparent was left an inheritance to the child before or while they were in foster care, would that be transferred into this, or how would that be handled?
This is to deal with settlement monies, so that if a child were in a car accident and received a settlement, and the insurer would be paying that money to the state, and that goes into a special account for the child. Okay. So if a child were to receive a lump sum through an inheritance, you know, I will have to do some research and get back with you on that question. Well, I'm not sure if Mickey knows the answer to that. No. About what happens when children receive inheritances, I'm just not sure.
I think it would probably be held separate until they turn of age, but if they were setting up the estate properly.
Chair Gilliam, Chair Tomei, welcome, and members of the committee. Mickey Cerise, Deputy Assistant Director for the Department of Human Services. I believe your question is, if the child receives a lump sum of money while they're in foster care, what happens to those funds? We do have a trust fund for children that are in foster care. And if the lump sum of funds is coming from like a personal settlement from that, those funds do travel with the follow the child. So even after they exit foster care.
Anything further on this while we have our two department representatives? Seeing none, thank you both for coming forward and for helping to clarify. And we're going to stand at ease just for a moment. In session in House Committee on Human Services. This is one of the bills that's got some paperwork and fiscal issues, so I am going to carry over House Bill 2059 to the next meeting, and I'm going to close the work session at this time on House Bill 2059. So it's, and again, I appreciate your patience, but I'm going to stand at ease and confer with my co-chair for a couple of minutes here. We are back, the House Committee on Human Services is back, calling it back to order, and the first order of business after our little stand at ease will be to announce we are, that House Bill 2438 will not be heard today, and House Bill and House Bill 3584 will not be heard today.
3584.
Yeah,
3584. Okay. We are...
Are those being carried over, Mr. Chair?
They are not.
Are they scheduled in the future?
They are not. It's possible that they could be upon agreement, but they are not scheduled or carried over.
How could they be upon agreement?
No, you couldn't. Excuse me.
They're dead if you don't carry them over, if they're not scheduled.
If you want to hear them again, they have to be carried over.
Okay, we're going to stand at ease for a moment. I'm sorry. I'm going to amend my last two announcements and indicate that House Bill 3584 will be carried over to the next meeting, and that House Bill 2438 will be held over to our next meeting. Thank you for your patience. Once again, stand at ease. A work session on House Bill 3434, and I would entertain a motion.
No. You can't vote 3434. You don't have the fiscal.
Colleagues, we don't have the fiscal on 3434. So we cannot take any action. So I'm going to close. Excuse me. I'm going to carry over to the next meeting House Bill 3434 because of the fiscal issue.
Sorry.
Very sorry, Representative. You'd wait that long for that. Let's do that. Madam Chair, this is a good time to have you vote on the bills.
Sure. Thank you.
If you'll help me with those.
Okay.
So I need to entertain a motion, or what I say?
Yeah, you just want to suspend the rules to allow Representative Tomei to vote.
Do I need to suspend?
So you just want to gavel and say suspend the rules.
Okay. Colleagues, I'm going to move that we suspend the rules for the purpose of letting our co-chair, vote on, I believe, three bills. Right. House Bill 2237, 2600, and 3482. You got those, Matt? Is there any objection to suspending the rules for this purpose? I see none, so I'm going to ask Matt to ask the co-chair.
Which bill?
On
2237.
Separately?
Yeah.
Let's do them together, okay. Since that's the motion. First, if you'd ask her about House Bill
2237. Aye.
And then, secondly, if you'd ask her about
2600. Aye.
And lastly?
3482. Aye.
Chair Tomei votes aye on all three bills, and so we will let those motions carry.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering why it's posted for the public hearings not being heard until 9:30.
Yes, Jennifer, tell us the logistics of that.
Inadvertently, our agenda was not posted to meet the 72-hour requirement for bills that this is their first public hearing until 9:30, so therefore public hearings cannot be held until that time.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Can we do anything on them, or do we have to just keep them closed until 9:30?
Well,
yeah. All right. What do we have left?
The only one is if you want to do a public hearing,
but
I know you
were going
to carry it over, but you could do the public hearing in
2230.
We agreed to carry it over. So I just need that outside. So what happened to
the
public hearing?
I don't know. I'll carry that over. I'd like to announce that House Bill 2235 will be carried over to the next meeting.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
2045?
2235 will be held over to our next meeting. And we're going to stand at ease.
Until what, 9:30?
She's going to ask if... I'd like to call back to order the House Committee on Human Services, and I'd like to open the first public hearing on House Bill 3584 and ask our colleague, Representative Frederick, if he would start us off. Oh, yeah. And Representative, I'll have Jennifer give us the overview, and then we'll go with you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3584 directs the Department of Human Services in consultation with Oregon Health Authority to provide training to foster parents regarding appropriate aesthetic care to include care for hair, face, body shape, and type and skin for the children of the children for children of African American, Hispanic, Native American, Asian American, or multiracial descent.
Thank you, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. Representative.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Tomei, and members of the committee. First of all, I realize that we have two folks who are intimately aware of the cosmetic issues.
Did you identify?
I did not. I am Representative Lou Frederick from Portland, House District 43, North and Northeast Portland. We have two members of our committee who are probably most understanding of cosmetic issues, the metrosexuals of Representative Gilliam and Representative Greenlick. However, I gotcha.
I'm not going to be your fashion consultant anymore.
I understand that. But beyond them, I wanted to bring this forward. First of all, I should say that I'm glad my grandparents on my mother's side aren't finding out that I just had to be told about this issue. They owned a beauty salon in Rhode Island for 60 years, and maybe I just assumed that this was already taken care of as part of a cultural competence training, because when you think about it, it just makes sense. Parents pass along a lot of hair and skin care habits and techniques to their children. When it goes well, it's a tremendous bonding opportunity. We don't really think about it, and it comes naturally. Personal aesthetic care is both highly personal and culturally fraught, because we have this cultural construct called race that is based at least partially on hair, skin, face, and body types. And those hair, skin, face, and body types call for different kinds of care based both on physical characteristics and on cultural traditions. But what if you are in foster care with foster parents who know little of your hair or skin type, who know nothing of the techniques for caring for and for styling the hair you have? What if their attempts to help give results that embarrass or disappoint you? What if their attempts to simply tidy you up, as any parent would, turn into a painful exercise? How many of you realize that black people, especially black youngsters, hate to show ashiness? How many of you know what ashiness is? Which is how black skin looks when it gets a little flaky and when it's out when people are out in the sun. How many of you have a clue as how to deal with the hair of a black or a multiracial young person, know the options available? How many of us are tuned into the cultural significance of long hair among Native Americans and how it's cared for? So that's what this bill is really about. It's a recognition that body image is intensely important to young persons, and competent care and grooming of the particular hair, face, skin, and body types that foster children of minority or ethnic or mixed ethnic descent may have that requires some specific training. Now, I can speak best to African-American and mixed-race hair and skin, and I've known a number of many young people who have struggled to use the products and tools available for European skin and hair without competent mentors who knew how to help them find better tools and use them. This bill just says that children in foster care should receive the same kind of competent care of their external well-being that will allow them to grow comfortable with their own skin. These are my grandparents, and I have another set of grandparents as well. My other set of grandparents, one of them is pictured in this picture that I'll pass around to you so that you can see it. But different kinds of hair. When I was a kid, my grandfather took me aside. Again, he ran a beauty salon, and he said, you need to recognize the two things. You have six kinds of hair on your head. Because I have a very mixed background. You also will probably, and my father said, you can't really shave the way that everyone else can. I can't use an electric razor, because if I use an electric razor, my hair immediately turns in on itself, and I get ingrown hairs constantly. So those kinds of things are things that are simply not known or not understood by a lot of foster parents. I also should tell you that as soon as I mention this generally to most women, they get it immediately. because that's a real connection. I have several people in the audience with me who will speak to this, who can have different experiences, but they can tell you why this was brought forward, and I'd like to bring them forward. But thank you for listening.
Good. Thank you, Representative. We'll just move ahead then. Are there those in the audience already? Good. Please come on up. And when you're ready, identify yourself and we welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Lou Frederick, for having us today and the rest of the representatives present. My name is Barbette Woodall. I am a multiracial African-American 39-year-old woman. I was in foster care between the ages of 14 and 17 in a rural area where I was the only African-American descendant person. At that time in my life, I had some chemical damage brought to my hair because of my parents were not aware of how to care for my hair on a day-to-day basis. I still suffer from some permanent hair loss from that experience of a chemical service that was brought to me. This is what has inspired me to come to wonderful Oregon here. I've been living here now for about 15 years, and it inspired me to go to beauty school, and I'm a licensed professional here within the community. Because of my experiences in foster care of having different type of biracial hair, I'm an expert in my field, and I consult with various agencies to help them with their children's hair in foster care and adoption, and also with Oregon Youth Authority. Thank you, sir. I see children on a regular basis in my place of business that I've been in business now for 5 years, and I've sought out to help them, you know, with their children's hair and skin care. Children more and more today, based on their parents' lack of education of hair and skin care, are suffering from fungal and bacterial infections, which plague their bloodstream system. Also, children's self-esteem is more affected because of the fact that they are in a household and in the community, and that people are not aware of how to care for their hair and skin care. And so based on that, I'm here to support this bill to help and hopefully, you know, want to see that this is taken care of and there's an ongoing need for this in the state of Oregon. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I think we'll hold questions if you'll just stick with us till the very end of the panel. Please.
Hello. My name is Cody Redekop. I am a multi-biracial African-American, 17 years of age. And I also was in a foster home from the years 2003 to 2005 in Mill City. But a year of that, maybe the year 2003, early 2004, I spent in Georgia with my aunt, Atlanta, Georgia. And there I was introduced to the means of taking care of my hair, taking care of the type of hair I have. And I was introduced to the grease and the do-rag method and the hairstyle called waves that I would have to maintain. And I came back to Oregon, and I went through the District 9 foster, the branch over by the fairgrounds, and I was introduced to my foster parents, and they asked me if I needed anything like deodorant, shampoo, things like that, and I said yes, I need a do-rag and some grease, because through the transaction, I lost my items, and they're like, oh, what are those things? And I explained it to them, and they're like, no, we have shampoo, and we have all that, and I was like, okay, and they didn't get it for me. So time went on and on, and my hair just started getting, like, nappy, and I would try to pick it, and, like, I would use plastic combs, and they would break, and it was just inefficient, and I couldn't really maintain my hair. And then Christmas was coming up, and they asked me what I wanted for Christmas, and I told them again, I want grease, and I want a rag, and I want this kind of lotion, and I specifically told them what I wanted, and they're like, okay, okay. And then it was closer to Christmas, they asked me again, and I stated the same things. And then on Christmas morning, I woke up and I went there to open up my presents, and I did not get what I asked for, which was the simple hair and skin products. And I was disappointed, and I asked them, I was like, I don't understand. And they're like, well, we have the shampoo, we have this, and we have that. And they didn't understand that I needed certain products and certain, like, items to be able to maintain the hairstyle that I needed to and stuff like that. So I just would like to see the things happen, the necessary steps taken for these children to be able to maintain their skin and hair treatment and be able to be confident about their hairstyle and be able to have nice skin and just move on, you know. Thank you very much.
Thank
you. Let me see.
That's Cody, correct?
Yes, sir.
Cody, can you spell your last name for me?
REDDEKOPP.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Carol Martin, and I'm a certified foster care home provider in District 3. My first foster child was biracial. She came to me. And one of the first things I thought about right away was, how do I care for her hair and her skin? And the very next day, because I was very concerned, I wanted her to look really, you know, cute. She's 3 years old, and help her. I contacted a couple of local hair care salons in Salem. But to know there was nobody that could help me with that. And then I was referred to another local licensed hair care professional in Salem. And it was great. I learned quite a bit. I learned so much. And I'll be looking towards that same thing as she grows, as my foster daughter grows with me, and in helping her take care of herself. And DHS has so much training. So much training that I've gone through and I will continue to go through, that I really think this would be a great, great thing for all foster parents. And I just want to say thank you for listening to us.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for this panel? Representative?
If I read this thing more carefully, I probably would know the answer, but I can't find it. Is this required of all foster parents to have this training?
No, that's what I think we're trying to get.
The bill would require parents.
Right, okay. There's some more additional training for foster parents.
My concern was that if we required this only for foster parents caring for minority children, we might find we have more minority children than we have trained foster parents, and then we get into a different kind of problem. So,
right, that, yes.
Yeah, okay.
May I address that, sir?
Sure.
Okay. I think as being a licensed hair professional here in the in Salem, Oregon, that the hair and skin care training can be beneficial for all.
Oh, I agree.
And all nationalities, like Carol says. So.
When I first read this, I read it that it was going to be required of parents who have ethnic foster children,
right,
which is a very narrow, more narrow category. It's very hard to match homes to needs, but if all the foster parents have to do this, then it would be easier. I didn't want to set up a system where we had minority foster children with no trained foster homes. That's a whole other kind of problem.
And I would say we have two representatives from the department next. Any other comments or questions at this point? Seeing none, thank you all for coming. Appreciate
thank
it very
you.
Much.
Thank you.
And our two department representatives, Kevin George and Gloria Anderson, please come on up.
Good morning, co-chairs Gilliam and Representative Tomei. My name is Kevin George, and members of the committee. My name is Kevin George, and I work as a foster care program manager for children at the Department of Human Services, and made a quick run back over here. So I can catch my breath just for a quick second. I want to speak to House Bill 3584, and I unfortunately I didn't hear the testimony of the previous panel, but we'll go back and listen to that to make sure we are following suit with their recommendations and agreement as well. We had looked at this bill and went and spoke with Representative Frederick, and really I'd like to kind of point out three different things on this bill. One being that in our meeting with Representative Frederick, he did a very nice piece as far as educating of me, for sure, and educating our system of saying part of what we're talking about here is not necessarily just about hairstyles or some new fashion trend. We're talking about health care of children and health care of families, and how do you take that health care step forward. So that was really insightful to me, because currently the department does provide training in this matter. We provide an in-person training for foster parents. We also have a separate DVD that we we loan out to foster parents through our foster parent training library. The challenge of that is that not many people have taken advantage of that yet. So the in-person training, we haven't had many people take, and the online one or the video one, not too many people have actually used yet. So the conversation then with Representative Frederick certainly gave me some more insight as to say, instead of promoting this as there's some hair care training out there for children, for multiracial children, is to really promote it a different manner, saying this is about the health care issues. So as we talked about the health care, it really is that our department, Department of Human Services, needs to work very closely, and we have a commitment from Oregon Health Authority to work together on this through the multicultural health component to say, look, we need to develop a training that is available for all families. It's not just foster families. It's children who are in residential treatment programs. It's families within our communities that we're having the ethnic diversity is changing in Oregon, and so we need to be able to make sure that that is something that's available for everybody. There are a lot of multicultural or multiracial families in Oregon that need this training as well, not just foster parents. So we're interested in continuing to work on that. We do believe that we are providing some now. There's certainly another way of approaching it with other training, and I'm in support, or we're in support of the concept that Representative Frederick has brought forward today.
Thank you. If you do review the testimony, Representative Frederick is excellent, but I would skip over his first comment.
I'll take that note.
You're just a sore head.
Sorry. Go right ahead.
Good morning, co-chairs and committee. For the record, my name is Gloria Maria Anderson, and I'm the Diversity and International Affairs Manager for CAF of the Department of Human Services. As Mr. George already said, we are absolutely in support of this type of curriculum service to deliver ethnically, racially, and culturally appropriate service to the children that really do need this service. As you also know, we do have a couple other equity bill and other in a culturally competent continuing education bill through the Oregon Health Authority that have also been introduced this session. Those are more broadly would require that we will continue to provide more culturally specific services to children and families that are underserved and communities of color. We recognize that we really do need to do more of this to better meet the needs of our children in those communities and to reach the outcomes that we're all hoping to reach. As Kevin already said, we have been in conversations with Office of Multicultural Health, and they are ready and prepared to help us enhance what we already provide and to make it more accessible so that we are getting this to the hands and practices of those that are serving our children. So I thank you, and I thank you, Representative Fredericks, for opening this for public comment.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative?
I guess I just have a question. It's really not about this bill, but it kind of just it speaks to the bill. When a kid comes to you, or when a child is in foster care, and they ask their foster parent to do X, and X is rational, I used to work in the health and beauty section at Fred Meyer's. We stocked the shelves. These products are right there next to Head and Shoulders. I guess I'm kind of curious why, at an agency level, we would need the laws to ask parents to who are caring for these children just to do the right thing. And if what's the mechanism that you have in your agency if a child like the one who came and spoke with us, young man came and spoke with us and said he couldn't get this. If he comes to you and says, my foster care family is not doing X for me and I feel I need X, is there a mechanism in the system? Because I'm just kind of curious why, and not to discount what Representative Frederick is bringing here as a law, but it seems to me that this is a simple do the right thing kind of situation and not a call for statute. Is there a mechanism that kids can use to come to you and say, you're paying this person to take care of me, and they're not doing the right thing by me?
I'll do the first part, if I may. The truth is that I think foster parents and our caring caretakers want to do the right thing by all of our children, but frequently they don't know how. And there really are specific needs to meet these kinds of needs. And without some kind of formal training or coaching on how to use those products, they may see the products and not really know how to use them. So in terms of the method and process for them to bring that concern to us, I'll have Mr. George speak to that process.
In co-chairs, Gilliman, Tomei, and Representative Pierce, yes, children can actually talk to their caseworker and say, here's my needs in foster homes, and I'm not getting this taken care of. And certainly if they have a court-appointed service advocate who is somebody else on their case, they can ask that person as well and say, my needs aren't being met. I do think, and I underline Ms. Anderson's comment around not knowing how to do it. After the conversation with Representative Frederick and sharing with me stories of some individuals that live in other communities, meaning I'm going to Eugene, I'm going to Roseburg, I'm going to Bend, and maybe that the hair care products are not even available. So walking into Fred Meyer and saying, what is available in some communities? The hair care products are not available everywhere across the state because they don't have a population yet that is going to pay for them all. So I've taken Representative Frederick's encouragement and wandered around Fred Meyer at my store. Again, I live in Southeast Portland, so some of that stuff is available. Do I know what to buy today? No, I do not. I'll continue to educate myself on that. But it's truly going to those hair care experts or skin care experts, those folks in the communities that are just slowly becoming those experts out there, asking them, what do I do and how do I get that, and then informing our foster parents so that they actually have the tools to say, oh, this is what I need to do. So children can actually tell their caseworkers, tell their CASAs, raise the issue with other folks, and then we need to follow through and make sure that we're providing the right tools in the toolbox for foster parents and for caseworkers. Caseworkers, too, need to know this information, as well as foster parents.
Representative Wagner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see the purpose for this bill and hearing the testimony and everything, but I'm just, as somebody who was a foster parent and knowing there's a lot of bigger issues out there than this, but to me this needs to be handled with a plan for each child rather than education of each one, because even still it gets so broad and you get so much information coming in as a parent you'll forget some of it. But I'm just wondering, when a child's placed in a home, if there shouldn't be a directive with a plan. This is the type of food they're used to eating. This is the type of hair care products. To me, that seems like a better way to address it. So because now they've came out of this home, this is what they were using, then they should still be on that. And then you need to decide, is it beneficial for them to keep using what they were using? Because just because the parents, whoever was given to them, doesn't mean it was the right thing. But I think it should be encompassed more in a whole plan for a child, because we're hitting hair care products and skin products. Well, I was a kid with a lot of acne and things like that. So if I use an electric razor, I get ingrown hairs too, so I have to use a straight razor. I mean, I understand all these concerns. My wife's of a different culture than I am. Our kids have different hair types, so between each other even. So to me, I wonder, rather than this bill, if we shouldn't be looking at a plan with each child when it's placed in the home. Here's the sheet. Then the foster parent knows what to do and what they should be providing and looking at for the child. And it gives them some options on what they can shop and work with the child on. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Co-Chairs Gilliman, Tomei, and Representative Widener, I absolutely totally agree. One of the things that we do is we try to work hard on placement matching to make sure we have the right child with the right family. One of the activities that, or the strategies that we've been trying to employ over a number of years, is that have the foster parent actually sit down with the biological parent early on in the case, if at all possible for safety reasons, and to say, What are the practices of the child? What is their bedtime routines? What do they like at bedtime? Do they need a story? Do they need a stuffed animal? What do they like to eat? What don't they like? What are their allergies? Those basic kind of things that you share from parent to parent about children. This very nicely fits into that same mode. So your suggestion absolutely fits very nicely into that practice that we're trying to make sure it happens across the state now.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Colleagues, for the record, we are going to hold over House Bill 3584, carry over House Bill 3584 for the next meeting of this committee. So at this point, I am going to close the first public hearing on House Bill 3584. And colleagues, I'm going to quickly open two hearings. And I just want you to know that you are welcome in the discussion period to say anything or on record that you'd like, but I want to tell you that in consultation with my co-chair and our conversations with the co-chairs of our corresponding Ways and Means Committee, this has been the recommended path for these two bills. So in a moment, I'm going to open public hearings on 2056 and then also 2045, but I wanted you to know that. So with that, I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2056, and I don't believe we have anybody signed up to testify.
Correct.
So unless there's any discussion at this point,
I'm going to close that with the intention of also opening a work session. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2056, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2056.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2056 without recommendation. Oh, does it go? No, fiscal, right?
This is one that was requested to go to Ways and Means by the code. Yes, of Ways and Means.
I thought we said that Ramona found there was no fiscal impact and we were going to rescind it. Am I not right?
This is one that was specific. This one in 45 were requested by the co-chairs.
Got it. Okay. All right. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2056 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Chair Tomei has moved House Bill 2056 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll ask Matt to call the roll.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Greenlick?
Aye.
We're just moving it to Ways.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Aye.
Chair Tomei?
Aye.
Chair Gilliam?
Aye. The motion carries, and House Bill 2056 will be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. I'm going to open a public hearing now on House Bill 2045. And again, I don't believe there's anybody signed up to testify. The department is not interested in testifying. And so I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2045, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2045.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2045 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Chair Tomei has moved House Bill 2045 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, this one does...
Representative Widener.
This one does cause me a little grief because it's just... changes caused by budget reduction declaring an emergency. I mean, I'm just kind of curious what they plan on using this for the budget reduction. I mean, the other one I had a clue, but this one is so vague and wide open. I'm just kind of curious what Ways and Means thoughts are with this and what they plan on.
Representative, when you say kind of curious, are you curious enough to ask the department now, which you're welcome to do, or is this something you'd like to follow up with our two co-chairs?
I would like to actually hear from the department on this, what their thoughts are.
Would a representative come forward? Thank you very much. And it's Sonia Fisher joining us once again.
Yes.
Identify and... help us out.
Yes, for the record, Sonia Fisher from the Department of Human Services, Legislative Director, Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Widener. This bill is specifically a placeholder bill, which we can't specifically define at this point. We do anticipate that there will be budget reductions. We also anticipate this session that we will require statutory changes to deal with those budget reductions. One example that I can give you is the governor's proposed budget calls for rate reductions for nursing homes. Those are in statute. If the Ways and Means Committee moves forward and makes those recommendations, we will need statutory changes. We can't anticipate now what it will look like, but we do know that there is an expectation that there will be budget cuts and that we will need to make some statutory changes.
Thank you. Any other comments or discussion? Seeing none, thank you for coming forward again. I'll ask Matt to call the roll.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye.
Representative Parker.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
No.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Gilliam.
Aye. The motion carries, and House Bill 2045 will be sent to Ways and Means. I want to thank everyone for their patience today, and I believe unless there is, and there actually is some more business, I want to put on the record that House Bill 3086 will be carried over to our next meeting. And with that, I'm going to adjourn the House Committee on Human Services. Thank you.